I'm up here for this, aren't I?
You are here for this.
Test one. Okay, so it is working.
Yeah.
Hello, hello, hello. It's a bit low. Test one, two. Should I be getting louder? Hello, 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 hello.
Thank you. We'll get this underway. I'm the moderator for this session. We have three panelists up here. I will get them to introduce themselves briefly to you, to explain where they come from, their attitudes, and then we'll move into a discussion of some of the issues that have been raised, and we'll welcome questions from the audience. This is supposed to be interactive. It's a panel discussion. It's something where we have many, many viewpoints represented in the room and several more on stage, and it'll be great to get some interaction between them all. So let's kick it off. Here we go.
Hi, I'm Andrew Holmes. I'm Principal Clinical Advisor, Health Information with the Ministry of Health. I'm a paediatrician and a public health medicine specialist by background. The area that I'm particularly interested in and have been working on is... The area that I'm particularly interested in and have been working on... Okay. The area that I'm working on and particularly interested in is the transformation in health from moving from a provider-oriented health system to a citizen or person-oriented health system. And that comes into very sharp relief in the information systems. If you just think about the silos that we have with, for example, medical records that are held by health professionals, think of your general practitioner, and what a difference it would make if the information systems were oriented around a life journey or the person as they travel through life and the health system. So that touches on a lot of the issues covered today, but that's the particular angle of interest I have.
I'll talk into this. Can you hear me? That sounds really interesting. Well, I'm Claire Curran, and I'm the Labor member for Dunedin South, and I have been a politician for a year, and I hold the communications and IT portfolio for Labor, which I love and is fantastic. It's amazing. It's complicated and it's quite hard, and I think I was given the portfolio because it had the word communications in it, and my background is public relations. Guys, this area does have a public relations issue, which I'll touch on later. Coming from the PR industry, I was a journalist and also an anthropologist, so I find the kind of behavioural change and the impact on our society stuff really fascinating and interesting, and I've got too many things to touch on in 3 to 5 minutes. But what I do want to say is that this is not seen as one of the major portfolio areas, and it should be, because it's about the future. And it's about how we interact with each other, how government is run, all the services it provides, our future workforce, and how it's educated, and lots of other things as well. And it's also, it's got everything in it, this portfolio, big complicated ideas, philosophy, issues of philosophy and values about access, equity and fairness. And it's also about power and conflict, and monopolies and competition and all those kind of interesting things, and innovation and new issues and the role of the internet in it, which, you know, include things like the role of the internet in our lives, property ownership, privacy, censorship, all those things that you keep mentioning. But then there's this thing called open, which perhaps I find the most interesting thing, and because it touches on the one of the reasons I'm in politics, which is that I believe that there's one of the biggest issues of our time is that there's this cynicism between people and politics and the way that people feel about politics. And I think that if you're going to break that down, then the people that do politics and government has to become much more open. And that's one of the things that I'm trying to bring and that I believe that Labor is actually trying to achieve at the moment by practicing what we preach, by doing some things differently. And we are doing some things differently, and I can touch on some of them really quickly. There's this thing called Red Alert, and if you haven't heard about it, then you should be reading it, because it's the voices of Labor MPs talking about the things that they're thinking about and trying to truly engage and interact with people. That's been really good, and 34 out of 43 Labor MPs are blogging fairly regularly, some of them more regularly than others, and Trevor Mallard is in the room today, and he's the king blogger, and also got the most Facebook friends. but I found it sort of got a bit frustrating in the sense of we might be having all these good ideas, but what are we doing with them? So we're about to take the next step, which feeds really nicely into what Pia's been talking about, because we're about to launch our first open source policy development process on developing Labor's policy on open government. And one of the things I want to ask you people to do is to be engaged in that and give us a bit of help in how to do it if you're interested. So those are a couple of things. We're trying to get better at doing and using and thinking about social media, and also about the way that technology is used within Parliament as well as in government. In Parliament, I'm the chair of a new committee that's been set up called the ICT Committee, and it really has no role, but it could. Around actually us trying to practice what we preach, if we are preaching something internally in across the parliamentary sphere, and getting cross-party support for that. Just really quickly on the public sector stuff, which is really, really interesting and important, and please ask me questions about this, because my colleague Grant Robertson, who's the spokesperson for state services, is we're talking a lot about this stuff, about how the state and citizens can engage better, what's the role of technology, and how do we make sure that it's set up to do it in the best possible way. And we've started to have some really good talks about that and some really good ideas, which I really want to talk to you about today.
So I just had half an hour, so I'm not going to say much except to say that in terms of the politics, my knowledge should very much be taken, or my statement should be very much be taken with a grain of salt, whatever that term is. I mean, I've only been involved in this for 8 months. Prior to that, I've worked for government as a, you know, in IT, but the politics of this is very new to me, but I'll try to do my best. And but having said that, Senator Lundy is very, you know, open and engaged, and so you can either tweet her or comment on her blog to get some more insight to what's happening in Australia.
We've got here then, we've got a politician, we've got an advisor to a politician, and we've got somebody working in a department, sadly, for a politician. And so that's a whole spectrum of experience here in government, and a range of experiences. You've heard their interests. I want to ask them, before we come to the questions, I would like to ask them something that is going to change in the current year at their particular level, their aspect of the things they're working on. How is 2010 going to be different from 2009 and 2008? How are we going to see something new? Are there pilots? Are there projects that you're working on at the moment that we'll see come to fruition this year?
In health, there are two things. One, the establishment of a national IT board, health IT board, so that brings to a more tangible centre some of the decision making. And the second thing is the shared services agency, and that has the potential for making much more coordinated procurement, and perhaps present some of the opportunities that Lawrence mentioned before.
Well, just on the procurement issue, that's something I'm taking a particular interest in. And you might have seen just before Christmas, in the week just before, there was a statement by the Ministry of Health trumpeting an agreement it had with Microsoft between itself, all the DHBs and another couple of agencies, health-related agencies, around for an undisclosed sum of money for licensing. And I thought to myself, well, where's the information about how that agreement was reached? And a bigger question, how much money is being spent on licensing across all of the government agencies? And how is that process being undertaken? So that's a project that I'm undertaking this year, is to try and find that information out. And the other project, which I just alluded to, is the development of some policy in the open arena. And the first one is around Labor's policy on open government, or what it could be and what people's input to that can be. And then hopefully from that will spring a whole series of other open policy projects from other members of the Labor caucus who are really keen to follow this through and do it themselves. So that's just some of the things we're doing.
So the next month is going to be trying, and I'm going to stay obscure, I'm trying to change some people's minds on things. After that, in terms of our office, Australia is going into an election year for the federal government, and for most senators, they have a different election cycle to the federal government, but for senators of territories, of which Kate is one of those, they have the same election cycle. So we're going into an election year for Senator Lundy, which will be bizarre, I've been told, for me to experience. But so we're going into an election. We plan on doing some more projects around increasing transparency into an office. I mean, one of the things that we've done is the using of our actual name. So you'll see anything you see posted by Kate is by Kate. Anything posted under my name is my name. There's three or four people in the office that post. But we're looking at more projects into improving transparency into a political office. And we're also looking into, improving the public sphere model and doing some more public engagement in that sort of way, and trying to really take that into broader government, so encouraging more departments and agencies to pick that model up and use it for their normal process of policy advice. And I think that'll keep us busy for a little while, if I survive it. I don't know yet.
Thank you. I'll now turn it over for your questions. I'll give you the mic.
Thank you very much for getting up to have questions asked of you. One big thing, and I blogged about this recently, that I've been observing, and I think a lot of people find incredibly frustrating in all sectors of government and lawmaking, is writing, on the one hand, having written a letter to several ministers and getting absolutely form-standard replies which deal with none of my actual questions and are just the policy statement. And yet, lobbyists from the industry get to go and have private meetings with them and get this incredibly high-quality access to these people. So what do the public have to do to get the same level of access? Because we're obviously not important if we're just getting a form letter.
Well, not being a minister yet, I can't answer that from a minister's point of view, but I mean, from an MP's point of view, you should get a response, and you should get a response that's to you. It will include a policy statement, if there is one, and that's good, because then you get to know what the policy is. But I think what you're saying is what is wrong. One of the things that is wrong is the disconnect between people and politicians. And part of the problem is that there's too many people for each politician in order to actually engage. And yes, the lobbyists, some of them, do get access where you get to sit down and talk to each other, and they get to advocate. But that's why these new mediums are really important. But it's not just the medium, it's how you use it. And, you know, I keep thinking to myself, it's not... And I wrote a blog post on this the other day saying that social media is not marketing. If you're going to use it effectively, you don't use it as a marketing tool to try and convince people that your policies are the right ones. You actually use it to have a conversation with them, and they can then have a conversation back with you. That's time consuming, and from a backbench opposition's perspective, I'm pretty busy, but I do try to respond. And I know that, you know, most people that blog on our on Red Alert do, you know, respond to comments and through other forms of social media that we're using. How you manage that when you get to ministerial level, I don't know. Maybe Trevor, you want to talk about that, but that is a big challenge, and it's a really big challenge thinking about using this stuff going forward. And if we come out of opposition. When we come out of opposition and get back into government, that we're not just paying lip service to this. And I'm absolutely committed to that, but God, you know, we've got to find ways to do it that are authentic.
The other thing is, and I've got a bit of experience in this from both sides of that question, but first of all, the person who is your local representative, in Australia anyway, has to see you. So that's your first port of call. That's a person that absolutely has to see you. And so, make a time and go and see them. And by getting in and chatting to them, all very amicably and informative, and, you know, asking them to follow up on very specific things that they can follow up is a good path. In terms of the ministers, I understand the concern, and I agree to some degree with the concern. But the thing is, anyone can get in to see a minister. It's just a matter of you do need to call, you do need to establish yourself as being credible. I believe very strongly that groups, you know, actually getting together and trying to do this as a group is useful. This is the whole reason I got involved in Linux Australia in the first instance in Australia. NZOSS should be a body through which you can do this kind of stuff, and to establish that credibility to have those conversations. As an individual, of course, you can still do it. It's just a little bit harder, just because, and it's nothing nasty or nefarious at all. It's just the person at the other end needs to figure out who you are and how much time you're worth. That's a very, very difficult job when they're being pounded for that, many, many times a day. So, just get in and establish credibility, and often enough, they should be able to meet up with you.
Hi. Is technology actually relevant to our aspirations for how government should work? Or is it just a gateway for the modern generation to learn about the same old problems that have affected government since the times of ancient Babylon?
Is that a kind of devil's advocate question? Well, yes. Absolutely. You know, I mean, to me, the big debates... That the new debates that were, I don't know, or recasting of so many debates that are happening at the moment around things like ownership and of material, copyright, intellectual property, privacy, censorship, all of those issues are critical, and they're technology based, and so that's, you know, one aspect of it. And the usage of technology is massive, and the take-up of I've just been thinking a lot about the voters of the future, because I'm engaged in thinking about people voting, but their Generation Y and the ones that come behind them, and they're outnumbering the baby boomers this year. So how they communicate and talk to each other is via technology. So we have to as well. But government has to learn how to do it better, and opening up letting go of the control. And I know that a number of people have touched on this today, and I think Lawrence talked about it, losing this kind of mentality of controlling all of the information that is out there, and changing the culture of the public sector is going to be critical to that.
This is my big bugbear and why I think that every office needs to have technically savvy people. I think that generally the principles, the high-level principles, people try to get right, and you know, generally right throughout the ages people try to do that, but it's in the implementation that it matters that you actually get, you know, how things are going to work. I think that if there were, generally, if people were more technologically savvy and more comfortable with technology, we would have better decisions being made and a better understanding. Asking people to who have no understanding about technology make the right decisions about, for instance, highly technical and untested intellectual property changes to a trade agreement, for instance, is a very difficult thing to ask when you don't have the technological understanding of the consequences of those kinds of actions. I think that we need good technical principles, good technical understanding. It doesn't mean everyone has to be, you know, a hacker, but it does mean that everyone needs to have access. Everyone who's in a decision-making role and an agenda-setting role should have access to people who can assist them with that kind of knowledge. I think it's absolutely vital.
I'm going to interject myself on this as a moderator. Having suffered through bouncing off government and attempting to change it, I have a perspective on that, which is that technology allows us to do something that we couldn't do before, which is to solve some of those scale problems that we were talking about earlier, where everybody wants to talk to a politician, but a politician can't meet individually with every single person that might want to talk to them. Technology can help us aggregate our questions and our opinions and make it more manageable for a politician to react to our opinions and our thoughts. So technology has a role there, but if we want to change the way that government works, we have to understand what it is that we're trying to change. I have bounced off it many times before I was fortunate enough to find some friends, some people who were in there, had been in there, could help me understand what it was that I was getting wrong and understand the pressure points to push in order to affect the change that we want to see. So yes, we will discover the same things that previous generations have discovered, and we need to know how the government works, but we have an end that is different from their ends that I think that we can, or a means to get the ends that they wanted, which is better democracy, that they didn't have and that technology will let us get. Should we have the next question? Andrew, wait.
What is the most effective way to counter the power of the corporations and the importing of the millions of dollars of proprietary software that you alluded to before with the Microsoft Health deal, and was alluded to this morning as well? How do you counter that effectiveness of those corporations? What's the most effective way for you in government to counter the power of those corporations who are constantly lobbying you for their solution versus open solutions or better solutions?
Seems pretty simple, really, sort of. First of all, you need the information of how much is being spent. It seems that information isn't that easily obtainable right now, and what it's being spent on. And then you need a good process that's open and transparent of making a decision. And I mean, we've already seen today that there's a policy framework in place around this stuff that was established 6-7 years ago, so some of that work's already been done. It's about taking it seriously, and leadership is probably the other key part of it.
I actually think that part of that is just having access to people who can give an alternative view, and which is why I think that it's, you know, ultimately geeks are very much the pioneers of this age. We've gone through the, you know, agricultural age, we've gone through our revolution, we've gone through the industrial revolution, we're now in the information revolution, and we're all the pioneers of that revolution. So whether we like it or not, it's actually up to us to try and, you know, spread our knowledge and bring the rest of society out with us. So I think that the best things to counter it, believe it or not, because, you know, I don't think you actually genuinely have anyone, whether they be in politics or not, wanting to be, you know, to have a biased view. They try to get as much information as they can, but, you know, often enough that's going to be the most easily accessible information, because those people are actually approaching them and not hurling stones from outside. So I would suggest that the best thing that can be done is for people to actually engage with political officers, with departments, and to just be engaging in trying to communicate a, you know, alternative perspectives. And I actually think that we're much further ahead in terms of having that alternative view presented now than ever before. So it's a really, really good time.
I would just really reiterate some of what Lawrence Miller was saying. From my position, I would start with the policy settings, and we've got a good framework in New Zealand that challenges the change in the behaviours, and closer attention to those factors, cost, functionality, interoperability, security, and take a more principle-based approach to it, and just keep revisiting that within a robust framework.
Just an answer to the question that came about how do you communicate with the politicians, and that this is experienced over several government agencies in both state and Commonwealth. The best way is to actually personalise the communication, not be a form letter, and to ask quite specific questions and go back and expose. If they don't answer your question, go back and ask it again. So what we're really saying is if you get there and ask for information, either they can give it to you, or they can't. If they can't, they need to give you a really good reason. If they can, you'll get that information eventually. The trick is to be in there and not part of a mass mail-out or something that just gets treated as a mass mail-out. So I'm just saying that it's an answer to that. It's come up, and it really is. And it doesn't matter about what technology you use. It's that getting to the point of what you want to find out and getting information is really important. It's the way to communicate.
I work for a not-for-profit in South Australia, and we're delivering social services on behalf of all levels of government. We've got 26 funding bodies, and we report data against 15 different data standards. So we would really like open standards and open APIs so we can directly interface with government systems, and it would save us a huge amount of money in management and overhead. I'm interested from a Department of Health perspective. What's the feeling on the inside around interfacing with external agencies that are engaging with your clients?
Our policies are very clear, moving towards open standards. Sorry, say that again. Well, this is forward-looking. We've got what we've got at the moment, and we need to move from where we are to a future state, and there's transitional difficulties, but the policy settings are clear. Ooh, I think you could answer that better than me. Transitional difficulties, legacy systems, legacy arrangements, In health, you know, speaking as a doctor, one of the sort of aphorisms is first do no harm, and so there's a real risk averseness to making some of these bold steps. If it's not broke, don't fix it kind of attitude. I think those are the main difficulties. Also mapping out the roadmap to a future state, and there's quite a few vision statements about where we want to get to, but the drop down to the most immediate steps to take to get there is a bit more fraught.
I was on the Health Information Systems Advisory Commission for a while, so I can say the things that this poor man as an employee of a government department cannot say. So one of the things that I think, and I'm not representing HISAC anymore, so I can say this as myself, that the, one of the reasons the legacy systems that we have the structure of the New Zealand healthcare system is to be broken up into many, many DHBs, each of which makes independent purchasing decisions. The management structures of those DHBs are such that the IT needs for standards and interoperability aren't highly prioritized because each group is making its own recommendations for what it buys. So it buys systems that don't communicate with other systems group, other groups' systems. And it's an ongoing battle to find CIOs who can speak tech and make correct tech decisions, but also justify those correct tech decisions to the business managers who are responsible for writing checks. So all too often, they'll understand the correct decisions that have to be made and be completely incapable of communicating that to somebody who will sign a check, which is a tragedy. Attempting to solve those is a long and painful process, which is why it's not going to happen overnight. But what the recommendations of the recent review, the healthcare system review, the ministerial review group, go some way to addressing that with, as Andrew said earlier, the shared services unit, which is an idea of maybe if we get some of these services together in one place, we'll have fewer of those independent decisions and it'll be easier to make a system that can interoperate with itself, which is a radical idea. Next question.
There seems to be a bit of a complacency or culture of complacency about getting change at a various different levels of government. My question is quite simply, do you think there isn't enough pain being presented or being shown publicly? I mean, back in the days in the 90s, we had multi-million dollar blowouts in every IT project on the planet, and they were very public. And nowadays, it seems to be that when failures occur, that there's no justification or no pain being displayed to change the culture. Would you agree?
Would it be fair to say that the question was, are we public?
That's very tricky. I would defer that question to Lawrence Miller.
So to repeat what Lawrence said, his sense is that there have been fewer mistakes made in the last 10 years and more successes, fewer bigger projects as well, and fewer risks taken, says the audience. Unfortunately, we don't have time for any more questions, but the panelists, I'm sure, will make themselves available during the break. I think that was somebody punching the air with excitement at the opportunity to wrangle our guests. Would you please put your hands together and give them a warm thank you.